The black memory tortured Angel as she gazed at little Ruth Altman. She wanted desperately to leave the tent, but was afraid if she got up she would awaken the others. Staring up at the canvas ceiling, she tried to think of something else. The rain started again, and with it came all her old ghosts. "Can't sleep?" Michael whispered. She shook her head. "Turn on your side." When she did, he drew her back against him, tucking her into his body. The child shifted, snuggling deeper into the quilts and pressing into Angel's stomach. "You've got a friend," Michael murmured. Angel put her arm around Ruth and closed her eyes. Michael put his arm around both of them. "Maybe we'll have one like her someday," he said against her ear. Angel stared into the fire in despair. Chapter 19. From Jesus, the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 19, verse 19. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Michael settled the Altmans comfortably in the cabin and shouldered his own trunk. Angel followed him to the barn, biting off any protest. She could see his mind was set. What in the world was he going to get out of this deal? Why do this for total strangers? The rains came day after day. After the first few nights, Angel found comfort in the sounds of the owl in the rafters and the soft stirring of mice in the hay. Michael kept her warm. Sometimes he would explore her body, rousing alien sensations that unnerved her. When his own desire became too great, he drew away and talked about his past, and especially the old slave he still loved. In those quiet, unthreatening moments, Angel found herself telling him what Sally had taught her. Head propped up on his hand, Michael toyed with her hair. "Do you think she was right about everything, Amanda?"
"Not by your rules, I guess."
"Whose do you want to live by?" She thought before answering.
"My own."
Outside the confines of the barn and Michael's protective arms, Angel was affectionately accosted by Miriam. At every turn, the girl undermined Angel's determination to remain aloof. Miriam made her laugh. She was so young and full of innocent mischief. What Angel could not comprehend was why this girl should want to be her friend. She knew she should discourage her, but Miriam grew obtuse at her rebuffs and continued to tease and delight her. Starved of any family life as a child, Angel did not know what was expected of her when she and Michael spent evenings in the cabin with the family. She sat quietly and observed. She was captivated by the respectful camaraderie between John and Elizabeth Altman and their five children. John was a hard man who seldom smiled, but it was clear he adored his children, and that he had a special affection for his eldest daughter, despite their constant arguing. Dark-eyed Andrew and his father were much alike in appearance and manner. Jacob was gregarious and given to practical jokes. Leah was solemn and shy. Little Ruth, open and bright, was the darling of the whole family. For some reason Angel could not contemplate, the child adored her. Perhaps it was her blonde hair that drew Ruthie's infatuation. Whatever it was, every time she and Michael came in to join the family, Ruthie sat at her feet. It amused Miriam. "They say dogs and children always pick a tender-hearted person. Can't argue with that now, can you?" For a full week after they moved in, Elizabeth was too weak to get out of bed. Angel cooked and took care of the household duties while Miriam saw to her mother and the children. Michael and John dug up stumps in the field. When they came in for supper, John sat with his wife and held her hand, talking to her softly while the children played pick-up sticks and string games. Watching John, Angel was reminded of all those weeks Michael had cared for her after McGowan's beating. She remembered his tender care and consideration.
He had tolerated her worst insult with quiet patience. He was in his own element with these people. She was the one who didn't belong. Angel couldn't help but make comparisons. Her father had hated her enough, even before she was born, to want her thrown away like so much trash. Her mother had been so obsessed with him that she had almost forgotten she had a child. From her life with harlots, Angel was used to women who worried incessantly about the shape of their bodies and whether they were beginning to age. She was used to women who fussed with their hair and clothing and talked about sex as easily as the weather. Elizabeth and Miriam were new and fascinating to her. They adored one another. They spoke no harsh words, were clean and neat, without being preoccupied about their appearance, and talked about everything but sex. Though Elizabeth was too weak to do any work, she organized and orchestrated Miriam's and the children's days. At her urging, Andrew made a fish trap to set up in the creek. Leah fetched water. Jacob weeded the vegetable garden. Even little Ruth helped, setting out the dishes and utensils and picking wildflowers for the table. Miriam washed, ironed, and mended clothes while overseeing her siblings. Angel felt useless. Once Elizabeth was up, she assumed full command. Unpacking her Dutch oven and pans, she took over the cooking. The Altmans had replenished their own supplies in Sacramento, and she made delicious meals of fried salt pork with gravy, baked beans sweetened with molasses, cornbread, and stewed jackrabbit with dumplings. When the fish trap worked, she fried the trout in seasonings. She skillet-baked Johnny cakes while she spit-roasted two ducks. Most days, she made sourdough biscuits for breakfast. As a special treat, she soaked dried apples and made a pie. She sighed one evening as she set the food on the table. "Someday we'll have another cow and have milk and butter again." "We had one when we left home," Miriam said to Angel, "but the Indians took a liking to her near Fort Laramie." "I give Papa's watch for a spoonful of plum jam," Jacob said, making his mother laugh and cuff him lightly. Following supper, it was the Altman family custom to have devotions. John frequently asked Michael to read the Bible. The children were bright and full of questions. If God created Adam and Eve, why did he let them sin? Did God really want them running around Eden naked, even in winter? If there was only Adam and Eve, who'd their children marry? Eyes twinkling, John settled back to smoke his pipe, while Elizabeth tried to answer the endless questions. Michael shared his own opinions and beliefs. He told stories rather than read them. "You'd make a fine preacher," John said. Angel almost protested, and then realized he meant it as a compliment. Angel never joined in the discussions. Even when Miriam asked her what she thought, she shrugged it off or turned the question back on the girl. Then one evening, Ruthie went straight to the heart of the matter. "Don't you believe in God?" Unsure how to respond, Angel said, "My mother was a Catholic." Andrew's mouth fell open. "Brother Bartholomew said they worship idols." Elizabeth blushed bright red at his comment, and John coughed. Andrew apologized. "No need," Angel said. "My mother didn't worship any idols that I remember, but she prayed a lot. Not that it ever did her any good." "What'd she pray for?" irrepressible Ruthie asked. "Deliverance." Determined not to become part of a religious discussion, she took up the materials Michael had purchased for her new clothing. There was a still silence in the cabin that made Angel's skin prickle. "What's deliverance mean?" Ruthie asked. "We'll talk about it later," Elizabeth hushed her. "Right now you children have schoolwork to do." She got up and took out the children's school books. Angel looked up after a moment and saw Michael's gentle gaze on her. Her heart fluttered strangely. She wished for the cool, quiet darkness of the barn and no one noticing her,
not even this man who had come to matter entirely too much. She returned her studious attention to the cloth in her lap. How should she start? Never having made her own clothing before, she didn't know how to begin. She kept thinking of all the money Michael had spent and was afraid to cut into it and ruin it. You look glum, Miriam grinned. Don't you like to sew? Angel could feel the color mounting in her cheeks. She was humiliated by her own ignorance and inexperience. Of course, Elizabeth and Miriam would know exactly what to do. Any decent girl would be able to make a shirt waist and skirt. Miriam suddenly looked aggrieved, as though she realized she had drawn attention where she shouldn't have. She gave Angel a tentative smile. I don't enjoy it much myself. Mama is the seamstress in our family. I'd love to help you, Elizabeth volunteered. You've enough to do already, Angel said roughly. Miriam brightened. Oh, let Mama do it for you, Amanda. She loves to sew, and she hasn't had much to work with over the past year. Not waiting for an answer, she took the material from Angel and handed it over to her mother. Elizabeth laughed, looking delighted. Do you mind, Amanda? I suppose not, Angel said. She gave a start of surprise when Ruthie climbed up into her lap. Miriam grinned. She only bites her brothers. Angel touched the dark, silky hair and was enchanted. Little Ruth was soft and cuddly, with pink cheeks and bright brown eyes. Angel felt her heart grieve. What would her own child have looked like? She blotted out the horrible memory of Duke and the doctor, and savored Ruthie's affection. The child chattered like a little magpie, and Angel nodded and listened. Glancing up, Angel encountered Michael's gaze. He wants children, she thought, and the thought hit her solid in the pit of her stomach. What if he knew she couldn't have them? Would his love for her die then? She couldn't hold his gaze.
Papa, would you play the fiddle for us? Miriam asked. You haven't played in so long.
Papa, please, Jacob and Leah begged. It's packed away in the trunk, he said, eyes shadowed. Angel expected that to be the end of the discussion, but Miriam was dogged.
No, it's not. I unpacked it this morning.
John gave his daughter a dark look, but she only smiled, knelt down beside him, and put her hand on his knee.
Please, Papa.
Her voice was very gentle. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, remember? A time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. Elizabeth had stilled where she stood, her hands on the fabric spread out over the supper table. When John looked at her, his eyes were dark with pain. Her own were swimming in tears. It has been a long time, John. I'm sure Amanda and Michael would enjoy hearing you. Miriam nodded to Leah, who fetched the instrument and bow, then held them out to her father. After a long moment, he took hold of them and laid them in his lap. I tuned it this afternoon while you were out in the field, Miriam admitted as he ran his fingers across the strings. Then, lifting it, he set it beneath his chin and began to play. At the first few notes of the tune, Miriam's eyes flooded with tears, and she sang with a high, pure voice. When he finished playing, he laid the fiddle on his lap again. That was beautiful, he said, plainly moved. He touched his daughter's hair. For David, hm?
Yes, Papa.
Elizabeth raised her head, tears running down her cheeks. Our son, she told Angel and Michael. He was only 14 when... Her voice broke, and she looked away. He sang alto, Miriam said. He had a wonderful voice. He far preferred lively songs, but Amazing Grace was his favorite hymn. He was so full of life and adventure. He was killed near the Scots Bluff, Elizabeth managed. His horse threw him when he was chasing a buffalo. He hit his head. No one said anything for a long time.
Grandma died at the Humboldt sink, Jacob said, finally, breaking the silence.
Elizabeth sat down slowly. We were the only family she had left, and when we decided to come west, she came with us. She was never very well.
She wasn't sorry, Liza, John said.
I know, John.
Angel wondered if Elizabeth was sorry. Maybe she never wanted to leave home. Maybe all this was John's idea.
Angel looked between the two of them and wondered if John wasn't thinking the same thing. But when Elizabeth regained her composure and looked across the cabin at her husband, there was no resentment in her expression.
John lifted the fiddle again and played another hymn. Michael joined in the singing this time. His rich, deep voice filled the cabin, and the children were in awe of him.
"Well, now," Elizabeth said, smiling in delight. "The Lord blessed you indeed, Mr. Hosea."
The boys wanted to sing road songs, and their father obliged. When they exhausted their repertoire, Michael told them about Ezra and the slaves who sang in the cotton fields. He sang one he remembered. It was deep and mournful.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
Michael's voice pierced Angel's heart. Angel was tense when she and Michael finally returned to the barn loft. The what-ifs went around and around in her head. What if Mama had married a man like John Altman? What if she herself had grown up in a family like that? What if she had come to Michael whole and pure? But it hadn't happened that way, and wishing didn't make it any better.
"You'd have done very well in the Silver Dollar Saloon," she said, striving for lightness. "That singer they had wasn't nearly as good as you."
"He used some of your same tunes," she added wryly, "but the lyrics were different."
"Where do you think the church got most of their music in the first place?" Michael chuckled. "Preachers need recognizable tunes to get their congregations singing along." He put his arms behind his head. "Maybe I could have won a few converts." He was teasing her, and she didn't want to soften any more toward him. He made her heart ache as it was. When she looked at him, her nerves felt raw.
"The lyrics I could sing for you are offensive." She felt his thoughtful silence as she undressed and slipped beneath the blankets. Her heart was pounding so fast she wondered if he could hear it. "And don't try to teach me yours," she said. "I'm not singing praises to God for anything."
He didn't turn away from her, as she hoped. He gathered her in his strong arms and kissed her until she could scarcely breathe.
"Not yet, anyway," he said. His hands fanned the spark inside her until it was a flame, but he didn't quench it. He gave her the space and freedom she thought she wanted, and let it burn. Within a few days, Elizabeth had a yellow plaid shirtwaist and rust skirt ready for fitting. Angel was hesitant to undress, embarrassed at the poor state of Tessie's worn undergarments.
"It needs another tuck here, Mama," Miriam said, pulling in an inch at the shirtwaist.
"Yes, and a little more fullness in the back, I think," Elizabeth said, fluffing the material at the back of the skirt.
Angel was disturbed that they would go to so much work on her behalf. The less they did, the less she would owe. "I'm going to be working in the garden in these clothes."
"You needn't look like a drudge doing it," Miriam said.
"I don't want this to be a bother to you."
The dress was lovely as it was. It didn't need to be a perfect fit.
"A bother," Elizabeth said. "Nonsense. I haven't had so much fun in months. You can take the dress off now. Be careful of pins."
As Angel removed the dress and reached quickly for Tessie's worn clothing, she saw Elizabeth's pitying glance at the shabby camisole and threadbare pantalettes. If she had her things from the palace, these ladies would be impressed. They had probably never seen satin and lace undergarments from France or silk wraps from China. Duke had dressed her only in the finest. Even Duchess, cheap as she had been, wouldn't have thought to dress her so crudely. But no, she had to appear to them in underwear made from used flour sacks. She wanted to explain that the things weren't hers, that they belonged to Michael's sister. But that would only raise questions she was loath to answer. And worse, it might reflect badly on Michael. She didn't want them thinking ill of him. She didn't know why it mattered so much, but it did. She dressed quickly, stammered out a thank you, and escaped to the garden. Where was Michael? She wished he were close by. She felt safer when he was. She felt less alone and out of her element when he was in sight. He and John had been in the field digging stumps this morning, but they were nowhere in sight now. The horses weren't in the corral. Perhaps Michael had taken John hunting. Young Leo was gathering miner's lettuce from around the oaks, and Andrew and Jacob were fishing. Angel bent to her weeding and tried not to think about anything.
"Can I play here?" little Ruthie asked, standing on the gate. "Mama's washing and says I'm being a pest."
Angel laughed. "Come in, sweetheart." Ruthie sat in the pathway where she was working and talked incessantly as she pulled up the weeds Angel showed her.
"I don't like carrots. I like green beans." "So there you are," Miriam said, swinging the gate open. "I told Mama I knew where to find you," she said, wagging her finger at her baby sister. Stooping over, she chucked Ruthie's chin. "You know better than to leave her and not say exactly where you're going."
"I'm with Mandy."
"Mandy," she said, straightening, her eyes dancing over Angel. "Well, Mandy's working." Angel lifted the small carrot from the basket.
"She's helping."
Miriam sent Ruthie to report back to Mama and knelt to work with Angel.
"It suits you better," she remarked, thinning bean plants.
"What does?" Angel asked tentatively.
"Mandy," Miriam said. "Amanda just doesn't seem right somehow."
"My name was Angel."
"Really?" Miriam said,
raising her brows dramatically. She shook her head, eyes twinkling.
"Angel doesn't fit you either.
Would Hey You do?"
Miriam chucked a dirt clod at her. "I think I'll call you Miss Pris," she decided.
"By the way," she added, tossing weeds into the bucket, "I wouldn't be so embarrassed about your unmentionables."
At Angel's startled response, she laughed. "You should see mine."
A few days later, Elizabeth gave Angel something wrapped in a pillowcase and told her not to take it out in front of anyone. At Angel's curious look, she blushed and hastened back to the cabin. Curious, Angel went into the barn and dumped out the contents. Picking the things up, she found a beautiful camisole and pantalettes. The cutwork and embroidery were exquisite. Clutching the lovely things in her lap, Angel felt the heat pouring into her cheeks. Why had Elizabeth done this? Out of pity? No one had ever given her anything without expecting something back. What did Elizabeth want? Everything she had was Michael's. She didn't even belong to herself anymore. Shoving the things back into the pillowcase, she went outside. Miriam was toting water from the creek, and Angel intercepted her.
"Give these things back to your mother, and tell her I don't need them."
Miriam set the buckets down.
"Mama was afraid you'd be offended."
"I'm not. I just don't need them."
"You're angry."
"Just take these things back, Miriam. I don't want them."
Angel thrust them at her again.
"Mama made them especially for you."
"So she could feel sorry for me? Well, tell her thank you very much and she can wear them herself."
Miriam was affronted.
"Why are you so determined to think the worst of us? Mama's only intent was to please you. She's trying to say thank you for giving her a roof over her head after months of living in that miserable wagon."
"She needn't thank me. If she wants to thank someone, tell her to thank Michael. It was his idea."
She immediately regretted her harsh words when the girl's eyes filled up with tears.
"Well, then,
I suppose he can wear the camisole and pantalettes, can't he?"
Miriam snatched up the buckets again, tears running down her pale cheeks.
"You don't want to love us, do you? You've set your mind against us."
Angel smarted at the hurt in Miriam's face.
"Why don't you keep them for yourself?" she said more gently.
Miriam was not mollified.
"If you're of a mind to hurt my mother, then you do it yourself, Amanda Hosea. I won't do it for you. You go tell her you don't want a gift she made for you because she loves you like you're one of her own children. And that's exactly what you are, isn't it? Just an idiotic child who doesn't know something precious when it's staring her right in the face."
Her voice broke, and she hurried away. Angel fled back to the barn. Clutching the camisole and pantalettes, she sat with her back against the wall. She hadn't thought a few cutting remarks from a naive girl could hurt so deeply. Flinging the things away from her, she pressed her fists against her eyes. Miriam came in quietly and picked them up. Angel waited for her to leave with them, but she sat down instead. "I'm sorry I spoke so crossly to you," she said meekly. "I'm far too outspoken."
"You say what you think."
"Yes, I do. Please accept Mama's gift, Amanda. She'll be so hurt if you don't. She's worked on these things for days, and it took her all morning to get up nerve enough to give them to you. Every young bride should have something special," she said. "If you give them back, she'll know she's offended you."
Angel drew her knees up tightly against her chest. She felt trapped by Miriam's entreaty.
"I would have gone right past all of you on the road that day."
Grimacing inwardly, she held Miriam's gaze.
"You knew, didn't you?"
Miriam smiled slightly.
"You don't really mind now we're here, do you? I don't think you knew what to make of us at first. But that's changed, hasn't it? Ruthie saw through you right away. Contrary to what you may believe, she doesn't take to everyone she meets. Not the way she has to you. And I love you, too, whether you like it or not."
Angel pressed her lips together and said nothing. Miriam took the camisole and pantalettes and folded them onto her lap.
"What do you say?"
"They're very lovely things. You should keep them." "I already have some tucked away in my hope chest. Until I'm a new bride, flower sacks will do very nicely." Angel could see she wasn't going to get anywhere with this girl.
"You don't know what to make of us, do you?" Miriam said. "Sometimes you look at me so strangely. Was your life so very different from mine?"
"More different than you could ever imagine," Angel said bleakly. "Mama said it's good to talk things out." Angel arched a brow. "I wouldn't think to discuss my life with a child."
"I'm 16, hardly that much younger than you."
"Age hasn't anything to do with years in my business."
"It's not your business anymore, is it? You're married to Michael. That part of your life is over."
Angel looked away.
"It's never over, Miriam."
"Not when you carry it around like so much baggage."
Angel gave her a startled look. She laughed mirthlessly. "You and Michael have a lot in common." He had told her that same thing once. Neither one of them could understand. You didn't just walk away and say things had never happened. They had, and they left deep, raw, gaping wounds. Even when the wounds healed, there were scars. "Just walk away and forget," she mocked. "It's never that simple." Miriam toyed with a blade of hay and changed the subject.
"I imagine it would take a great deal of effort, but wouldn't it be worth it?"
"It always catches up with you."
"Maybe you just don't have enough faith yet in Michael."
Angel didn't want to discuss Michael, especially with a nubile girl like this one, who was far better suited for him than she was.
"I was walking the other morning and saw a cabin," Miriam said. "Do you know who lives there?"
"Michael's brother-in-law, Paul. His wife died coming west."
Miriam's dark eyes were alight with curiosity.
"Why doesn't he ever come to visit Michael? Are they feuding?"
"No. He's just not very friendly."
"Is he older or younger than Michael?"
Younger.
Her smile was playful.
How much younger?
Angel shrugged. In his early 20s, I guess. She could see where this was going and didn't like it. Miriam reminded her of Rebecca, the prostitute who'd been so intrigued with Michael.
Is he handsome? Miriam persisted.
I suppose to a virginal young girl, anyone without warts and buck teeth would be handsome. Miriam laughed.
Well, I am 16. Most girls are married by now, and I haven't even a beau on the horizon. Naturally, I'm interested in who's available. I have to find a groom so I can wear all those pretty unmentionables Mama's made for me and packed away in my trunk.
Thinking of this sweet girl with Paul disturbed Angel greatly. Pretty things don't mean very much, Miriam.
They really don't. Wait for someone like Michael.
She could scarcely believe she had said it.
There's only one Michael, Amanda, and you've got him.
What's Paul like?
The opposite of Michael.
So that would mean ugly, weak, glum, and irreverent?
It's not funny, Miriam.
You're worse than Mama. She won't tell me the least little thing about men.
There's not much to know. They all eat, defecate, have sex, and die, Angel said without thinking.
You really are bitter, aren't you?
Angel winced inwardly. This girl couldn't possibly understand, not without having experienced Duke. She should have kept her thoughts to herself rather than blurt them out without forethought. What could she say? I was raped at 8 by a grown man. When he got tired of me, he turned me over to Sally, and she taught me how to do things a nice girl couldn't even imagine.
This girl should stay innocent, find a young man, marry him as a virgin, bear his children, and have a family just like the one she came from. She didn't need to be polluted.
Don't ask me anything about men, Miriam. You wouldn't like what I would tell you.
I hope a man looks at me someday the way Michael looks at you.
Angel didn't tell her that men had been looking at her like that for longer than she cared to remember. It didn't mean anything at all.
Papa says I need a strong man who'll keep a firm hand on me, Miriam said. But I want a man who needs me, too. I want someone who can be tender as well as strong.
Angel studied Miriam as she sat dreaming in the stall about her Prince Charming. Maybe things would have been different if Michael had met Miriam first. How could he have helped but love her? She was vivacious, unsullied, and devout. Miriam had no ghosts, no devil on her back. Miriam stood and brushed the hay from her skirt.
I'd better stop dreaming and help Mama with a wash.
She bent and put the camisole and pantalettes on Angel's lap.
Why don't you try these things on before you make up your mind?
I wouldn't hurt your mother for anything, Miriam.
The girl's eyes teared up.
I didn't think you could.
She left.
Angel leaned her head back. Right from the first, Duke had bought her a wardrobe full of frilly frocks and white lace pinafores and filled her dresser drawers with satin ribbons and bows. Most of her clothes had been made in Paris.
Be grateful, Sally had told her, bathing and dressing her meticulously for Duke's impending visit.
Try to remember you'd be starving on the docks if not for Duke. Say thank you and mean it. Be happy for him. If you become too difficult, Duke will find another little girl who'll be good. And what do you think will happen to you then?
The warning still sent chills through her. At 8... Angel had thought Duke would order Fergus to strangle her with this thin black cord and throw her into the alley where she would be eaten by rats. So she tried to be grateful, but it never worked. She feared Duke and loathed him. Only later had her terrible dependence on his goodwill made her think she loved him. It hadn't taken long to learn the truth. Duke still haunted her. He still owned her soul.
No, he doesn't. I'm in California. He's 4,000 miles away and can't find me. She was with Michael and the Altmans, and she could decide to change her life. Couldn't she?
She looked at the pristine garments in her lap. Elizabeth didn't want anything from her.
Unlike Duke, she gave a gift freely without expecting anything back.
Duke's words mocked her from deep within. Everybody wants something, Angel. Nobody gives you anything without expecting something back.
Closing her eyes, she saw Elizabeth's sweet, pensive face. I don't believe you anymore, Duke.
Don't you?
Rebelling against the echo of his voice, she stood up swiftly and stripped off her clothing. She put on the new camisole and pantalettes. They fit her perfectly. She hugged herself in them. She was going to dress and find Elizabeth and thank her properly. She was going to pretend that she was pure and whole and not let the nightmares of the last 10 years destroy it for her. Not this time. Not if she could help it.
Chapter 20. From Shakespeare. Of all base passions, fear is most accursed. Michael worried about Amanda's growing attachment to the Altman family. John still talked about Oregon as though it were heaven, and spring was closing in fast. As soon as the weather stayed clear, John would be ready to move on. Michael knew he couldn't count on John's women holding him back. Good land was the only way to change his mind. Young Miriam clearly adored Amanda like a sister, and Ruth was her constant shadow. Elizabeth thought her youngest's attachment to Amanda was endearing, but Michael saw danger in it. Amanda was opening her heart a little more each day. What would happen to her if the Altmans pulled up stakes and left? He straightened from digging around the stump and looked back toward the cabin. Amanda was toting two buckets from the creek. Elizabeth had a fire going and a big wash pot over it, and Miriam was sorting through the basket of wash. Little Ruth skipped along beside Amanda, chattering gaily. "What she needs is a child of her own, Lord."
"She really took to her, didn't she?"
John said, resting on the pick handle and watching Ruthie and Amanda.
"Sure did." "Something worrying you, Michael?"
He slammed his boot onto the shovel and slung the dirt aside.
"You head north with your family and you're going to break my wife's heart." "Not to mention Liza's. She's adopted your wife, if you hadn't noticed."
"There's good land right here."
"Not as good as in Oregon."
"You're not going to find what you're looking for in Oregon or any place else." Michael talked to Amanda that night about selling off a portion of their own land to the Altmans.
"I wanted to discuss it with you before mentioning it to him."
"It won't make any difference, will it? He spent the whole evening talking about Oregon. He can't wait to leave."
"He hasn't seen the West End or the Valley yet," Michael said. "He may change his mind after that."
Angel sat up, her heart twisting at the thought of Miriam and Ruth riding away to Oregon. "What's the use? Once a man's made up his mind about something, there's nothing can change it."
"John's looking for good farmland."
"John's looking for a pot at the end of the rainbow."
"So we'll give it to him."
Michael sat up behind her and drew her back against him.
"He wants what's best for his family. The West End is the best we've got."
"All he ever talks about is Oregon. Elizabeth doesn't want to go, neither does Miriam."
"He thinks the Willamette Valley is Eden."
Angel jerked out of his arms and stood up. "Then he should have gone there in the first place instead of stopping here." She held herself in tightly and leaned against the wall, looking out at the cabin. It was dark, the lantern extinguished. The Altmans were all sleeping. "I wish they'd never come here. I wish I hadn't met any of them."
"They aren't gone yet."
She looked back at him, her face white in the moonlight. "Is Oregon that wonderful? Is it Eden like he thinks it is?"
"I don't know, Tirzah. I've never been there."
Tirzah. His desire for her was in that name. Angel felt tingling warmth run down into her belly when he said it. Tirzah. She tried not to think about what it meant, but when she heard the hay rustle softly as he arose, her heart jumped. She looked up at him as he came close and could hardly draw a breath. When he touched her, she felt a rush of warmth and was afraid. What was this power he had over her?
"Don't give up hope," he said, feeling her stiffen as he drew her into his arms. He wanted to tell her they could have a child of their own, but there was time enough for that, and this wasn't it. Not yet.
John might change his mind when he sees what we're offering. She didn't think John would even agree to look, but he did.
The two men rode away the next morning, just after dawn. Angel saw Miriam running across the yard, her shawl thrown carelessly about her shoulders. She swung the barn door open and came halfway up the ladder, calling to her.
"Mandy, I want to see the west end of the valley, too. It's only a few miles from what Michael said."
Angel came down the ladder.
"It's not going to make any difference."
"You're as bad as Mama. We're not packed and rolling yet." Miriam talked most of the way, coming up with all sorts of outlandish plans of how to prevent her father's exodus. Angel knew on a month's acquaintance that if John Altman said go, Elizabeth and Miriam would.
"There's Pop and Michael," Miriam said. "But who's that man with them?"
"Paul," Angel said, steeling herself. She hadn't seen him since that miserable ride back to paradise, and she had no desire to face him now. But what excuse could she possibly use for turning back? Miriam didn't even notice her trepidation, curiosity spurring her ahead. The three men spotted them. Michael waved. Angel gritted her teeth. She had no choice but to go ahead. She wondered what form Paul's attack would take this time. Michael came to meet her. She forced a smile and kept her chin up. "Miriam wanted to come." He kissed her cheek.
"I'm glad she dragged you along."
The men had been digging. Miriam scooped up some dirt. She crumbled it in her hand and smelled it. Her eyes shone as she looked at her father.
"It's rich enough to eat."
"Couldn't do much better."
"Even in Oregon, Papa?"
"Even in Oregon."
With a squeal, Miriam catapulted into his arms, laughing and crying.
"Wait till Mama hears."
"Your mother is to know nothing about it. Not until we've built a cabin for her. Promise me."
Miriam wiped the tears away.
"One mention of Oregon, Papa, and I'll spill the beans."
Angel glanced at Paul. His gaze brushed hers. It was full of silent, seething hatred. She drew her shawl more tightly around her. She had drawn a good amount of his blood that day on the road. She had put the knife in as deeply as she could. He looked at her again, longer this time. A wounded animal, enraged and dangerous.
"Paul is handsome," Miriam said on the walk back. "Such dark, brooding eyes."
Angel said nothing. Just before he'd ridden away, Paul had tipped his hat to her. No one but she had noticed, nor had they seen the expression in his eyes, an expression that consigned her to Hades. The men began work the next morning. Paul met them with his axe and adze. Michael located four large stones for the foundation. They began felling trees. Jacob learned the secret the third day when he followed Miriam with the lunch. He was sworn to silence and set to work. By the time Michael and John returned with him, the boy was too tired to speak.
"What are you doing to him?" Elizabeth asked. "He can barely keep his head out of the stew."
"Clearing land is hard work."
Angel worked with Elizabeth. She wanted to avoid Paul, but even more she wanted more time with Elizabeth and Ruthie. Elizabeth sensed it and asked her to watch over the children while she baked. Angel learned tag, hide-and-seek, blind man's bluff, and leapfrog. She stood on the creek bank and skipped rocks with Ruthie and Andrew. Most of all, she thought about how precious little time she had left with them.
"The children follow her about like chicks," Elizabeth told John. "She's like a big sister to them."
Miriam took Angel aside.
"The walls are up. Then, the roof set."
Angel heard each report with sinking heart.
"Paul's made enough shingles to cover the roof. Then, Michael and Paul are working on the fireplace. In a few days, the cabin would be finished, and the Altmans would leave."
2 miles began to seem like 2,000. Paul would be their nearest neighbor, How long before he poisoned their affection? The weather was clear and warming.
There's no reason to take further advantage of the Hosea's hospitality, John said. It's time we found a place of our own. He told Elizabeth to start packing.
Pale and tight-lipped, Elizabeth set to work.
I've never seen her so angry, Miriam said. She hasn't said a word to Papa since he said we were leaving. Now it's pure cussed stubbornness that keeps him from telling her.
Angel helped Miriam load the wagon. Andrew filled the water barrel hanging from the side, and Jacob helped John hitch up the horses. When Elizabeth came and embraced her, Angel couldn't speak.
I shall miss you dearly, Amanda, Elizabeth whispered brokenly. She patted her cheek like one of her children. Take good care of that man of yours. There aren't many around like him.
Yes, ma'am, Angel said. Miriam squeezed her hard and whispered,
You're a wonderful actress. You really look like you're saying goodbye to us for good.
Little Ruth was inconsolable and clung to Angel until she thought her heart would break. Why wouldn't they just go and be done with it? Miriam took Ruthie and whispered something that silenced the child, then lifted her into the back of the wagon with Leah. Ruth looked at Angel, and her face was glowing. All the children knew the secret now.
I'll give you a hand up, Liza, John said.
She didn't look at him.
Thank you, but I think I'll walk a while.
As soon as they started off, Michael went to saddle his horse. Angel stood in the yard, watching the wagon roll away. She missed them already, and could feel the gap widening like a chasm she couldn't cross. She kept remembering Mama sending her off with Cleo to the sea. She went into the house and packed a basket with sweet biscuits and winter apples. Nothing was going to be the same. Paul was at the cabin when the two of them arrived. He had a side of venison roasting on the spit. Angel hung up the curtains Elizabeth had made for Michael's cabin while the men talked. Michael went out to see if he could spot the Altmans yet. Angel felt Paul's cold gaze on her back.
I bet they don't know anything about you, do they, Angel?
She turned and faced him. He wouldn't believe the truth if she told him. I like them very much, Paul, and I wouldn't want them to be hurt.
He sneered, meaning you hope I'll keep your sordid past a secret.
She saw it was no use appealing to him. Meaning you'll do what you think you have to, she said dully. How long before he made them see her for what she really was? It would be very little time at all before they realized the animosity he held toward her, and they would wonder and ask why. What could she tell them? He wanted me to pay for a ride, and I gave him the only currency I had? Why had she ever let herself get involved with these people? Why had she allowed herself to like them? She knew it was a mistake from the beginning.
Love is debilitating, Sally had said.
Have you ever been in love? Angel had asked.
Once.
Who was it?
It's Duke. She gave a bitter laugh. But I've always been too old for him.
A cold voice broke into her thoughts.
Scared, aren't you?
Paul's smile was stone cold. Angel went outside. She couldn't breathe in the cabin. The pain was beginning already. It was the same pain she felt the day she heard her father say he wished she had never been born. The same pain when Mama died. The same when she learned of Lucky's death. She had even felt pain the first time Duke gave her to another man. Everyone to whom she drew close left her. Sooner or later they walked away. Or died. Or lost interest. Love someone, and it was a guarantee. Mama, Sally, Lucky. Now Miriam, Ruthie, and Elizabeth. How could I forget what it felt like?
Because Michael fed you hope, and hope is deadly.
Sally told her once that you had to be like a stone, because people would chip away at you, and that stone had to be big enough that they would never reach the very heart of you. Angel saw Michael standing in the sunlight, strong and beautiful. Her heart twisted inside her. He of all of them had chipped away the most, and sooner or later, He would walk out of her life and leave a hole where her heart had been. He came to her, and when he saw the look on her face, his eyes darkened.
"Did Paul say something to hurt you?"
"No," she rasped. "No, he didn't say anything."
"Something's upset you."
"I'm falling in love with you. Oh, God, I don't want to, but I am. You're becoming the air that I breathe. I'm losing Elizabeth and Miriam and Ruthie. How long will it be before I lose you, too?"
She looked away.
"Nothing's upset me. I'm just worried what Elizabeth will say to all this."
It wasn't long before she had her answer.
The wagon came over the rise and drew close.
Elizabeth stared in disbelief, looking from the cabin to John, who jumped from the wagon seat, a broad grin on his face. Then Elizabeth wept and threw herself into John's arms, telling him he was a wretch and she adored him.
"You should apologize, Mama," Miriam laughed. "You've been horrid to him ever since we left the Hoseas."
John took his wife's hand, and they headed out for a walk to see their land. Miriam set right to work in the cabin, but it wasn't long before she stopped and looked at Angel.
"You and Paul aren't on friendly terms, are you?"
"Not very," Angel said.
Ruth tugged her skirt, and Angel lifted her, setting Ruth on her hip.
"Oh, no, you don't."
Miriam dried her hands and took Ruth and set her down again. "Mandy has to help me make a cake, and she needs both hands to do it. Don't stick your lip out at me, young lady."
She turned her around and gave the little girl's bottom a light swat.
"Michael's right outside. Ask him to give you a piggyback ride."
She set out the bowls and glanced at Angel.
"Now, tell me what it's all about."
"What?"
"You know what. You and Paul. Was he in love with you before you married Michael?"
Angel gave a sardonic laugh. "Hardly."
Miriam frowned.
"He didn't approve."
"Doesn't," Angel said, "with good reason."
"Name one."
"You needn't know everything, Miriam. You know far more than is good for you already."
"If I asked him, would he tell me?" she challenged.
A wince of pain crossed Angel's face.
"Probably."
Miriam brushed a strand of hair from her eyes and left a smudge of flour across her cheek.
"Then I won't ask."
Angel adored her. One minute she was a child like Ruth, full of excitement and mischief, and the next a woman with a mind of her own.
"Don't think too badly of him," she said. "He was looking out for Michael."
She gave the sifter a last tap and set it aside.
"I knew a girl once who received a chunk of amethyst as a gift. It was beautiful. Bright purple crystals. The man told her it came from a stone egg he had cracked open, and part of the outer shell was still on it. Gray, ugly, and smooth." She looked at Miriam.
"I'm like that, Miriam. Only it's inside out. All the loveliness is here." She touched her braid and her flawless face. "Inside it's dark and ugly. Paul saw that."
Tears welled into Miriam's eyes.
"Then he didn't look hard enough."
"You're very sweet, but very naive."
"I'm both and neither. I don't think you know me half as well as you think you do."
"We know one another as well as we're going to."
The day grew so warm and pure that Miriam laid out blankets for a picnic. Angel saw Michael and Paul talking. Her stomach tightened as she thought of the horrible things Paul could gleefully relate to Michael about her cold-blooded behavior on the road. The grotesqueness of it nauseated her. How would Paul see what had happened between them? As a straightforward business proposition? A wanton act without feeling? No wonder he only saw black foulness inside her, the leprosy of her soul. She had shown him nothing else. She watched Michael covertly, hungering for his glance in her direction, just to show things were all right. But he was intent on what Paul was saying. She tried to calm her heart. Michael had seen her in a worse place than Paul could imagine, and still he took her back.
Even after she deserted and betrayed him, he fought for her. She would never understand him. She had thought men like him were weak, but Michael wasn't. He was quiet and steady, unyielding, like a rock. How could he still look at her with anything but loathing after all she had done? How could he love her? Maybe the reality of Angel hadn't caught up with him yet. When it did, he would look at her the same way Paul did. What he saw now was clouded by his own fantasy of a woman redeemable. But it's all a lie. I'm just playing another role. Someday the dreamer will awaken, and life will fall back into the old pattern again. As she talked and worked with Miriam, she pretended nothing bothered her. The dark inner silence grew, familiar and heavy, weighing her down inside. She shored up the cracks in her walls and girded herself for the coming attack. Yet each time she looked at Michael, she weakened. But the past kept catching up with her, no matter how far she ran. Sometimes she felt as though she were on a road, and could hear the hard beat of the horse's hooves coming, as though a coach were coming straight at her, but she couldn't get out of the way. In her mind she could see it racing toward her, and within it were Duke, Sally, Lucky, Duchess, and McGowan. And there on the high driver's seat were Alex Stafford and Mama. And they were all going to run her down. Elizabeth and John returned. Angel saw the way John touched his wife tenderly, and noted how Elizabeth blushed. Angel had seen that same look on other men's faces, but they hadn't smiled into her eyes just that way. With her, it had been business. The cabin was overcrowded, and she went out into the field of mustard flowers to sit down. She wanted to empty her mind. She wanted the anguish to go away. Ruthie joined her. The mustard weeds were taller than she, and Ruthie thought it a great adventure to make paths in the golden forest. Angel watched her dropping blossoms and chasing a white butterfly. Her heart squeezed tight and small. Tonight, she and Michael would walk away, and that would be the end of it. She wouldn't see Ruthie anymore, or Miriam, or Elizabeth, or the others. She hugged her knees tightly against her chest. She wished Ruthie would come back and want to be held. She wanted to cover her sweet face with kisses, but the child wouldn't understand, and she couldn't explain. Ruth did come back, eyes bright with childish excitement. She plopped down beside Angel.
"Did you see, Mandy? The first butterfly."
"Yes, darling." She touched her silky dark hair. Ruth gazed up at her with wide, sparkling brown eyes.
"Did you know they come from worms? Miriam told me."
She smiled.
"Is that so?" "Some are fuzzy and pretty, but they don't taste good," Ruth said. "I ate one when I was little. It was awful."
Angel laughed and lifted Ruth to her lap. She tickled Ruthie's tummy.
"Well, then, I don't suppose you'll eat another one, will you, little mouse?"
Ruth giggled and bounced up again to pick more mustard flowers. She tugged one plant up by the roots.
"Now that we have a cabin, are you and Michael going to come live with us?"
"No, sweetheart." Ruth looked at her in surprise.
"Why not? Don't you want to?"
"Because now we each have cabins of our own." Ruth came back and stood in front of her.
"What's the matter, Mandy? Don't you feel good?"
Angel touched her baby's soft hair.
"I feel fine." "Well then, will you sing me a song? I've never heard you sing."
"I can't. I don't know how."
"Papa says anybody can sing."
"It has to come from inside, and I don't have anything left inside."
"Really?" Ruth said, amazed. "How did that happen?"
"It all just drained out." Ruth frowned, studying Angel critically from head to foot.
"You look fine to me."
Looks can be deceiving. Still perplexed, Ruth sat in her lap.
"Then I'll sing to you."
The words and tunes were all mixed up, but Angel didn't care. She was content to have Ruthie on her lap and the fragrance of mustard flowers strong about her. She rested her head on Ruthie's and held her close, not noticing Miriam until she spoke.
"Mama wants you, Pumpkin."
Angel lifted Ruth off her lap and gave her a light pat to send her off again.
"Why are you cutting us off?" Miriam asked, sitting down with her.
"What makes you think I am?"
"You always do that. Ask a question instead of answer one. It's very annoying, Amanda."
Angel stood and brushed dust from her skirt. Miriam stood with her.
"You won't answer or look me in the eye, and now you're running away."
Angel looked at her squarely.
"Nonsense.
What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that just because we have a cabin of our own now, the friendship is over?"
"We'll all be very busy with our own lives."
"Not that busy." Miriam reached out to take her hand, but Angel walked away, pretending not to notice.
"You know, sometimes you can hurt yourself more by trying to keep yourself from being hurt," Miriam called after her.
Angel laughed it off. "Words from a sage. You're impossible, Amanda Hosea."
"Angel," she said under her breath. "My name's Angel." Everyone gathered at the blankets when Elizabeth, Miriam, and Angel brought out the food. Angel pushed her food around so the others would think she was enjoying the meal, but her throat closed every time she took a small bite. Paul looked at her coldly. She tried not to let it bother her. It was his own weakness that made him hate her so much. She remembered a few young men who paid for her services and came face to face with their own hypocrisy when they were putting their pants and boots on and getting ready to walk out the door. It suddenly dawned on them what they had done. Not to her. That didn't matter one way or the other. But to themselves.
"Haven't you forgotten something?" she would say, wanting to drive the knife straight into their hearts any way she could. They ought to know. First the red flags in their pale cheeks, then the dark loathing in their eyes. Well, she had driven the blade straight and sure into Paul, but she knew now she was the one impaled. It would have been better if she had walked all the way to Paradise that day. Maybe then Michael would have caught up to her before it was too late. Maybe Paul wouldn't hate her so much. Maybe she would not have so much to regret. Her whole life was one huge regret, right from the beginning. She should never have been born, May. Michael took her hand, and she started.
"What are you thinking about?" he asked quietly.
"Nothing."
Warmth spread through her at his touch. Disturbed, she drew her hand away.
He frowned slightly.
"Something's bothering you."
She shrugged, not meeting his eyes. He studied her thoughtfully.
"Paul isn't going to say or do anything to hurt you."
"It wouldn't matter if he did."
"If he hurts you, he hurts me."
His tone caught her full attention. She had intended to hurt Paul, and had hurt Michael instead. Not once had she thought that day of what it would do to him. She thought only of herself and her anger and her hopelessness. Maybe she could make some amends.
"It's nothing to do with Paul," she assured him.
"It's just that truth always catches up."
"I'm counting on that."
Michael watched Amanda throughout the day. She withdrew further and further into herself. She worked with Elizabeth and Miriam, but said very little. She was preoccupied, in full retreat, building her walls again. When Ruthie took her hand, he saw the pain in Amanda's eyes and knew what she expected. He couldn't promise it wouldn't happen. Sometimes people became too caught up in the problems of day-to-day living to notice the pain in someone else. Young Miriam noticed.
"She's here, but she isn't. She won't let me close, Michael. What's wrong with her today? She's acting the same way she did when we first came to your place."
"She's afraid of being hurt."
She's hurting herself now.
I know.
He wasn't going to reveal her past or